You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and I can't believe that 2024 marks 10 years of podcasting. Over the last decade, I have had the pleasure of talking with hundreds upon hundreds of passionate outdoors men and women who share the same excitement for hunting as I do. Whether you hunt public lands or private property, shoot traditional archery equipment or high-powered rifles, we all have one thing in common. And that's our love for the great outdoors. This year, I plan on continuing that tradition and bringing educational and entertaining content to your ears. Thank you for your continued support, and I hope you all have the best seasons of your life. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Mic check, ladies and gentlemen. We have a storm coming, and this is a warning. The storm, his name is Tony Peterson, and this is a BS session, my friends, and it gets a little cuckoo for a little bit. And, you know, I feel like anytime Tony comes on, it's like a make-a-wish. Like, he must think that I'm going to die or something. So this is like a Make-A-Wish Foundation type of, he's doing this out of the kindness of his heart when he doesn't have to. Right. And so, I don't know about you, but I need these types of episodes to kind of reset, to get my creative juices flowing. And then I can go back to, you know, the hunting type content. So every once in a while I need the reset button, and that's when I bring in Tony Peterson and we can just go crazy. This episode's a little over an hour long, and we have some really good conversations. What about? I can't really remember, but I will say this. We laughed a lot. We had a fun time, and I think there's a point, you'll definitely hear this. There's a point in this show where I feel like he is sincerely concerned about my mental health. And so you're going to hear that story as well, but it's a fun BS session. Anytime Tony's on the show, I have an absolute blast. And, from the sounds of it, you guys like listening to these episodes as well. So gotta drink some water real quick. All right. Commercial time. And I'm just going to run through these real quick. I want to send a huge shout out to all of these brands, because all of these brands really do help support the Nine Finger Chronicles, the Sportsman's Empire, the Hunting Gear Podcast, myself. And without them, I couldn't do what I do. And so huge shout out to these brands. If you are interested in a saddle, look no further than Tethered, the company that, in my opinion, revived the saddle hunting market, the saddle hunting industry. And now there's all these other companies coming out of the woodwork with saddles because Tethered was able to lay the way for them. And so if you want one of the originals in the, the new, you know, things that have come out recently, Tethered and their revival, go check out tetherednation.com. Read up on all their saddles and saddle hunting accessories. Next on Next up is Wasp Archery. Wasp is one of my favorite brands, because every time I hold one of their broadheads in my hand, I hear death metal in my brain for some reason. Like, and I get fired up because I know the first thing that hits the deer is a broadhead, and you want that broadhead to be well made and properly designed with the best materials. And so that, my friends, is Wasp. They have fixed blade and mechanical options. Go to wasparchery.com, enter the discount code NFC20, and you're going to save 20% off. The next company really doesn't even need an introduction, because you already know that Vortex Optics has some of the best, if not the best, optics on the market, and the best people working for that company behind the product. So if you're looking for a spotting scope, a range finder, rifle scopes, red dots, you name it, they have it. VortexOptics.com. Go check them out. Code Blue Sense. I've said this a million times. You gotta try the Rope-A-Dope system. I'm a huge fan of it. Use the discount code at CodeBlueSense.com, NFC20, for 20% off. I think it's gonna kind of change the way you look at mock scrape sets, and basically the deer come to investigate it. I put a trail camera up in front of that, and it allows me to get a ton of inventory of what's going on. Next on the list, if you're looking for a habitat tool or a machete type tool, you got to go check out the Woodman's Pal, woodmanspal.com. These guys have been around for, since the 40s. It's an American-made product. It's durable. You can beat the shit out of things with it. I handed one to my son, which could have been a mistake, but he handled it fairly well. And he chopped out some trail camera sets for me. So there were some bushes in front, some branches that were hanging down. He chopped those out, and awesome tool for that. So go check out the Woodman's Pal website, woodmanspal.com, and they have several other leather type products as well. Very unique company, and I'm glad to be working with them. Next on the list, Huntworth. Stay tuned. I don't know if it's a Valentine's Day or it's Father's Day. I think it's Father's Day. They're going to be putting out a really big sale. And so they should be, you should be following them on Instagram and Facebook or any social media. And basically, keep an eye out for some discount codes that are coming down the pipe. In my opinion, these guys, they do not have the elite brand prices, but they are definitely, from a quality standpoint, up there with the elite brands. And so I love their layering options, because that's important in how I hunt. And so go check out huntworthgear.com. And then last but not least, Full Sneak. If you're looking for some t-shirts, some sweatshirts, some hats, I got the brand new Slayer tee that's going to be hitting the website here very soon. I'm looking forward to that. Go check out fullsneakgear.com and let me know what you think, man. Place an order. Other than that, we got a good episode today. It's crazy. It's off the rocker. It's a fun one. Tony Peterson, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tony Peterson. Long time no talk, dude. I feel like it's been several months. Has it been several months?
It feels like it's been a long time, buddy. Hey, is it still considered a round of applause if you only get it from one person?
I don't know. Especially a person that's missing one of their fingers. Do you think if you took one clap and I took one clap and we measured the decibels, that because I have a missing finger, then I would register less?
Of course.
Yeah. Or
just a tiny, tiny bit though.
Or does this missing finger reduce drag? And now my three fingers and thumb on this side are traveling at a faster speed than yours, causing a bigger impact. This is a good conversation already. We might break the box office.
There's a lot more high level science happening on this podcast than I expected, buddy.
It's not high level.
I didn't know we were going to get deep into the world of physics here.
Well, we're not, because that is literally as far as I can go.
Right? I'm going to be honest. It caught me off guard because I'm usually just talking to that dullard Mark Kenyon, and he doesn't come up with anything clever.
Have you seen any crazy space movies or shows recently?
You know what? You want to know how you can tell it's been January in Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have.
Oh.
I watched two movies recently that I just normally probably wouldn't unless I was on a plane or something.
Yeah.
I watched a movie called Extinction. Have you seen that?
Is that the one where the planes start falling out of the sky and the whatever is attacking North America is like with MP, electric magnetic pulse or whatever that's called? And it shuts down all technology and stuff like that. Is it that show?
Nope.
Okay.
It is a different show about an alien invasion. And I was like, I can't even remember why I started it. But about halfway through, there is a bananas plot twist. So for a while, I was like, this is really dumb.
Yeah.
And then I was like, whoa. And then I was like, ah, that's kind of cool.
Okay.
It's worth watching in the winter if it's 112 degrees below zero and there's nothing to do.
Yeah. So long story short, it's an alien invasion movie.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
And then, speaking of aliens, I also watched Prey,
mm-hmm.
that Predator. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how I missed it or didn't. I actually did start it at one point, but I only made it like 4 minutes into it. And then I got distracted by something, but I watched it through its entirety the other day, and yeah. It's another very good movie for when it's the middle of winter and you have absolutely nothing to do.
Yep. Okay, and this is going to be one of the topics that we talk about today, and you brought it up, hunting in cinema. All right.
Okay.
So your boy Ranella over there, he actually, I believe he sat down, and it was probably, I think I've seen Cameron Haynes do it too, where they sit down, they watch a movie, and then they just tell everything that's wrong about it. Like, this would never happen. And so what is the thing? What was your trigger when watching this movie that was like, oh, but first you got to dissect the movie for us. You got to explain to us and then tell us why you're pissed.
All right. So it's based in, like, I think it's the early 1700s. Comanches down in the, you know, American Southwest, living their life, hunting, whatever. And then one of the predators gets dropped off to go on a little hunting expedition, mm-hmm. you know, as vacation, whatever. And so there's French explorers, there's Comanches. They all get real wiped out for a while. And then, you know, obviously the protagonist ends up figuring out how to defeat the predator. But it's one hell of a fight. The two things that I just couldn't get past. One wasn't hunting, right? One was just that. I get why they did it. So the Comanches in the movie speak English.
Okay.
Which, whatever, it's fine. I don't want to read subtitles, whatever. But then they meet these, you know, boorish French explorers who've been out there forever and shooting flintlocks, and they speak French, but they have a translator, and I'm like, it seems pretty crazy to show the Comanches speaking English,
mm-hmm.
1712 or whatever, and then these French explorers are whatever, you know. So that drove me a little bit freaking nuts. But the thing that just, and this happens with hunting in movies all the time, is when the Comanche warriors would draw their bows, they would turn their hand out.
Okay.
You know, so that, like, for the people listening, so you imagine shooting a traditional bow, recurve, yep. long bow, whatever. Three fingers on the string, one above, two below, however you hold it. Come right back to your face, typically, mm-hmm. right? Like, you want a repeated anchor point. We all know this, which is why we all shoot releases and nobody shoots with fingers anymore. But they all held the string with, instead of the palm of their finger close to their face, like aimed into their face, mm-hmm. or the palm of their hand, it was all pointed out. So their wrist was inverted like 180 degrees. And they all shot that way.
Okay.
And it just looks so dumb. And then they all had, and this might have actually been accurate, I'm not sure, but they all had their finger over the arrow, like completely over the arrow. So on your bow arm where you're holding the grip, imagine putting your finger up and then wrapping it around the arrow. Mm-hmm. And I get that actually might have been from riding horses and shooting. Like, that might be a realistic thing. But I was like, watching them draw that bow backwards like that over and over, I was like, it drove me nuts. And B, I haven't done this yet. I haven't looked it up because I'm like, this seems like something an authenticator would have picked up on real fast. So I'm like, did they shoot that way? And I never looked it up. But it like, from a modern perspective, I was like, this is driving me crazy.
Okay. I love where this conversation is going, because I don't know how many. Okay, here's one part of a movie. I think it was actually a show, Friday Night Lights. It was either in a movie or in the Friday Night Lights show where they're sitting in a tower blind, but it's one of those, it's actually a tripod with the mesh around it, so the top isn't there, right? And so they are drinking excessively, talking out loud, and rattling in this. And then this giant buck shows up, and it's down in Texas. Giant buck shows up, and they shoot it with a rifle. And I'm just like, I think I was watching it with my wife, and she says something like, well, that looked easy. I'm like, that's not real life, okay? There's no way that would happen, even with a rifle, if you're that loud and you're drinking and, oh, well, the game on Friday, blah, 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 blah. And then just all of a sudden a big deer shows up. It just doesn't happen that way. And so
hunting in movies, man.
Yeah. I wonder if this, for some reason, this tells me it might be real. I don't know why, but I feel like, because oftentimes in movies, and maybe not in the low budget ones, but they have people that are there to consult, like historians. Because I know that in the movie The Revenant, where, you know, there's a lot of things in that movie that they had a historian there to be like, actually, the guys didn't wear clothes like this. They wore clothes like this. Their boots looked like this. They did this. Like one of the parts in the movie, though, it's like springtime. It's like April. It's like the thaw time frame. And there's bugling elk in the background. And he's trying to shoot him. He shoots this big bull. And that's right before the grizzly bear scene. And the grizzly bear mauls him, which I have been told is the most realistic grizzly bear attack from people who have actually been attacked by a grizzly bear.
So they got that right.
Yep.
Dude. So I had a, speaking of like Hollywood and their disconnect from what we do, do you remember, were you, how involved in the hunting industry were you when, like, the Hunger Games was coming out and blowing up?
Oh, dude.
Were you pretty active then?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I was working at Peterson's Bow Hunting then, and I got a phone call at my office from a number in, like, Malibu.
Right.
You know, showed up on, like, the old school caller ID, whatever. And it was it was somebody from a production company out in California. And this is when, remember there were like some reality TV shows where they were like souping up guns and blowing up stuff. And like, can we, you know, like take this scene from a movie and can we, you know, replicate it into real life? Like what would happen? So this guy was working with a production company, and they wanted to do that with bows, because bow hunting and shooting archery, like archery was super popular during Hunger Games. Like, there are a lot of people probably listening to this who have no idea how many bows that little craze sold, but it was freaking nuts. So anyway, I don't even remember how this guy got in like contact with us, ended up calling me. And he's like, man, you know, we want to build custom bows that can shoot like 10 arrows at a time. And we want to blow up cool stuff with it. And I was like, do you know how a bow works?
Yeah.
Like, do you understand like the basic structure and function of the whole thing? And he had no clue, like, that you can only put in what you can put in with your arms. Like, he had no clue that we couldn't just build like these awesome custom recurves that could shoot 20 arrows at a time. And it was like one of those deals where you're like, I can't believe this even got to this stage. Like, this guy's like sourcing people who might help him out with this.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping I'm wrong about how they were shooting those bows in Prey. I'm hoping that's how they did it, and an authenticator came in and said, hell yes, this is it. But a little part of me is like, man, I don't know.
Okay. So while you were talking there, I just went to, I Googled how do Comanches shoot bows? And not they don't even come up here. All right. So this guy, and this is a 30-second video that I just kind of breezed through just now. And they were shooting down like this. They would hold the bow sideways, and then they would shoot. They would be low, and they would shoot low, like their hand would be down here. Not
even
up
when they're not on a horse.
You know, this was when they were standing on the ground. Or down on the ground. I didn't see anything to deal with a horse.
Did he show the orientation of the hand?
It would have been like this, but it was upside because the bow is lower. The palm would have been up facing the sky, and the bow was held sideways parallel with the ground. So they were shooting like this.
Interesting.
Like, so
we're kind of both wrong.
Yeah, we're both wrong, right? And what I actually hope happens is someone from the Comanche tribe reaches out to me and tells me. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring a Comanche historian on the podcast, and we're going to talk about how they shot their bows.
That would be, who was the guy who wrote Empire of the Summer Moon? S.C. Gwynn. Have you read that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man. You want to learn about the Comanches? That's your source material.
Yeah, I definitely need to. There was a while there where I went on a tear of reading and watching movies and documentaries about the Indians, like Native Americans across the plains, and the Comanches and the Sioux and things like that, along with like the Roman Empire. And oh, that's so cool that, you know, anyway, that was that's the take there.
Have you ever found an arrowhead?
Oh, yeah. I found three in my entire life. Never looking for them. They've all been within a 5-mile area. Okay, so back in the day, my buddy's grandpa owned a piece of river bottom property right on this creek. I call it a creek, but it's bigger than a creek, but smaller than a river type of deal. And so, we ended up, like, one day I was out there setting up a trail camera, and I look down where the deer were crossing, and there's like this black dirt. And then right off to the side of it, I saw this pink rock sticking out. I'm like, that's strange. It's pink. Pull it out of the ground. It's a spear tip. Like, it's not perfect, but you could tell it's an arrowhead, right? 5 miles south of that, I lost that property, got access to a new farm 5 miles south of that, and that's where I found the other two. One is in pretty, like, really good shape. Obvious, it's really good. So two of them there, and along that river, there's by now it's all like tore up, and the field edges have been plowed over and stuff, but they used to have burial sites, like the Mound Builder Indians, along that creek system that led into what would be the Skunk River, named after an Indian tribe in southern Iowa. And so a lot of, yeah, finding arrowheads is pretty freaking sweet. And then you find out, you know, you do your research on it, what it looks like. It could be like 8,000 years old. It's pretty awesome holding something in your hand that a person made 8,000 years ago.
Dude, I have never found one in all my time out there. Mm-hmm. My dad and I found, we were trout fishing in southeastern Minnesota when I was young. And we found a tool that was like for pounding maize, like pounding into flour.
Yeah.
And we donated that to a museum down there, but that's the only thing. I've never just been walking along. And where I grew up, where I started hunting, we had burial mounds out there. And I still have never just looked down into a field when I'm, you know, shed hunting or whatever and see the arrowhead.
Mine have all been in the spring or summer time frame. It's never been, you know, the one that I found, I was walking to check a trail camera. I checked it, switched the SD card out of it, took a piss, looked down, and I was standing this far from it, like an inch from it. I'm like, holy shit, look at that. And I never go looking for them either, but I find them. Speaking of archery, this one's going to be archery in movies, okay? The bow that Rambo shoots, okay? And when he draws it back, you can hear that zing, like it sounds like cable, metal cable being stretched. And but when he pulls it back, it looks like it has maybe 10 pounds. It's a 10-pound draw, and he's launching arrows through tanks and shit like that. And so I was watching that with my son the other day. It was on, I don't know, one of the Rambo, that Rambo movie was on. He's shooting like explosive tips and blowing people completely up. And my son's like, Dad, can your bow do that? I go, no bow can do that, buddy. Like, yes, I know there's probably explosive tips, but on a 10-pound draw, you know, Sylvester Stallone's drawing it back too easy. And then here's another one. In the movie Lord of the Rings, have you ever seen those movies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that Legolas guy, the elf, he's shooting like 500-yard dots right into people's eyeballs. And I'm like, that's also not accurate. And he's with his bow, he's shooting through like five people. Like, do you know how much, I'm sitting here just being an asshole. Do you know how much your arrow would have to weigh and how fast it would have to be going in order to go through the chest of four people and their armor? Like, it's not happening, even in a fantasy world.
No, it's almost like Lord of the Rings isn't an actual recap of our history.
Mm-mm. Yeah, but that would be sweet if it was.
Would it? Maybe.
Just imagine all of a sudden there's this, you know, like we find things every day, right? So example, LADAR, you know, using the LADAR in the rainforest, the Amazon rainforest, and finding these civilizations that had been covered up by, just imagine if there was a book that changed, that they found a book or a tomb somewhere that had like really advanced technology or bones of orcs or humanoids with horns and all of that stuff that used to be myth is now reality. That would be groundbreaking.
Isn't that the whole ancient aliens thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know. I think orcs are maybe a stretch, but which is not something I expected to say on a hunting podcast. But if you pay attention to it, like I wrote a foundation script the other day about, I started it off with like our coevolution with dogs.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, I mean, I know like Steve's super into the peopling of North America, right? Like when did people actually get here? How long have they been here? Like, did we have, were there advanced civilization of people before the Younger Dryas impact? Like there's a lot of stuff we're learning like that. And you talk about finding those, you know, looking through the jungle canopy with LIDAR and all of a sudden seeing you know, huge cities with canals and roads and all this stuff. So I was, anyway, I was doing a little research on this, and there's an archaeological dig site in Sweden or Switzerland, Sweden, I think. And they found a whole bunch of stuff, but they found a dog that had been buried 8,600 years ago that had a necklace around its neck, like a collar. It had some tools buried with it, and it was interred. It wasn't like, you know, they can tell when they're placed and positioned a certain way. They do the same thing with people. And there were dog toys buried with it. And so when we think about, you know, our coevolution with canine, wild canids, we're like, okay, it was probably super transactional for most of our history, right? Like you can chew on these bones, I'll give you a scrap of meat, whatever, but you gotta growl or bark if a bear gets too close or whatever. Yeah. Like this is our deal. This is how we get to be together.
Yeah.
But you think about that 8,600 years ago or 8,400 years ago, those people loved that dog enough to bury it with they're called grave goodies, which is, we have started to find that, but it's mostly with humans where you're like, okay, they buried this person with some, you know, seeds to eat and whatever, but they were doing that with dogs that long ago.
Yeah.
I think that's freaking fascinating.
Yeah. And so listening to a lot of history type podcasts like that, you know, everybody, you know, 10 years ago, everybody was like, okay, the human race started, you know, like the Homo sapiens that we know started at this time. But all this technology that's coming out seems to be pointing it back even way further than that. And yeah. So it's definitely, have you ever looked at a picture of a dog breed, like you're a dog guy, like 100 years ago, and they look nothing like what a dog, any species of dog, they look absolutely nothing like what they are today.
Yep. I mean, you can look back at Labrador retrievers, and it wasn't that long ago where your only choice was black.
Yeah.
And by that long ago, I mean like 200 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
The one that I saw was a Rottweiler, and what a Rottweiler looked like in the 1800s versus what it does today. And it looks almost more, it had the short snout, but it looked furrier. Like it had hair more like a coyote or maybe a little bit of a longer haired dog. And I'm like, that's no way close. But that's crazy how genetics, like once you put the human touch into genetics, you can breed anything in or out of a bloodline. It blows my mind.
Yeah, artificial selection's wild, man. And then we get things like French bulldogs.
Right. Right. They are a literal waste of space, I feel like. Those types of pugs, and like they're good for what? Listen, just when someone says I want a pug or a French bulldog, you're almost saying I just want to listen to an animal struggle for its own life every day.
It's it's a hard one for me to handle because you're right. I mean,
how much time do you actually think about French bulldogs and pugs? Is it something you're literally dealing with? Like you have to go to therapy for?
I literally have a podcast dropping next week called French Bulldogs and Individual Bucks.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's about the individual variance in deer. And I kind of backdrop it against dogs, right? Because we tend to think of deer behavior as generalized. You know, 5.5-year-old bucks do this, fawns do this, does do this. But you know as well as I do, when you start dealing with, you know, deer on this property versus the one over, they're different.
Right.
And some bucks daylight like crazy, some bucks are nocturnal as hell, like they're individuals.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I actually think about this a lot. But I also, when it comes to like French bulldogs and that Frenchie craze right now, I'm like, we never learn. We go through this with dog breeds. We did it with golden retrievers, and we sentenced most golden retrievers to cancer.
Yeah.
Which, you know, 60% of them. especially if they have any show breeding whatsoever, you can still get field bred Goldens. But we go through this where they get popular, the demand goes through the roof. So we breed and breed and breed because there's no regulations on breeding in the U.S. You go to Europe, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But here you can, if you're like, I own a Frenchie and I want a bunch of Frenchie pups to sell, there's nothing stopping you.
Right.
And so now you're just participating in this trend and these dogs are just bred for looks and availability. And it is a bad move long run. And we do it over and over and over again.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. I have several. But if you were, let's say you went on some spring bear hunt and you come across a scenario where a wolf puppy was right there and its mother had been killed by a grizzly bear and the rest of the pups had been killed and it's just one pup, would you take that pup and raise it as your own in your house and try to tame it?
No.
You
know why?
Why?
Because I don't want my kids to get eaten.
Mm-hmm. I would. But I also don't want my kids to get eaten. But how sweet would it be to have a wolf like Game of Thrones? That was just, it did what you commanded. But I don't think that the actual scale of the wolves in Game of Thrones are accurate because they looked bigger in Game of Thrones than a real wolf would be. However, you've seen that video of that wolf crossing the road in Siberia or somewhere like that, and it looks like a car. It's so huge.
Yeah.
So
I would not bring, even if I thought I had a real good shot at training that puppy to love my family. And
what if you didn't have a family? Would it change whether or not you brought that wolf pup home?
I would at least consider it then. Okay.
At least you're considering.
I would probably still opt for the safe route of just going, there isn't an amount of nurturing on a first generation wild canine that I think I could give it to override its just the rest of the genetics, right? Like I feel like you're like, that is just a gun with no safety and you are running all over the playground. Like eventually shit's gonna happen.
It would be like, do you remember where, for some reason, I envision what the inside of a house looks like with a wild wolf living inside of it, and it's just completely destroyed, which I don't know why this it reminds me of this, but the old lady who found what she thought was a cat, and she took pictures of it and hung flyers all over her town, and it was a possum, and it was like, found white cat, very angry or something, like not happy or something like that. It was a picture of a possum.
Dude, I would laugh at that, but I live in the suburbs and I deal with those people all the time. And it is just, you know, we joke a lot about like the disconnect from nature, right? Mm-hmm. Like earlier in our conversation talking about Hollywood, but my wife's on all these like Nextdoor apps and, you know, local Facebook pages and stuff. The amount of people who see a coyote, because we're covered in them,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, they're so adapted to this environment. The amount of people who are like, I had a wolf in my backyard, and then you see the picture, and it's 26 pounds, and it's a coyote.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, those are the people that, or when you go to Yellowstone, and you got all these people getting destroyed by buffalo, they're trying to take their pictures and they feel like, oh God, this is like a Disney movie. Let me go up and pet this 1,000 pound beast. And then they get thrown in the air. I don't go, when I see those videos, I don't go, I go.
Good. I mean, right. It's like, at this point, do you not understand? Like, have we not seen enough of those, you know, a buffalo just yeeting some freaking idiot tourist up in the air? Like, have we not seen enough of that yet? Like, who's going to Yellowstone who hasn't been exposed to those videos?
Right. Obviously, quite a few, you know, quite a few people. Here's another video that really makes me laugh. And that's any time an alligator trainer gets bitten by an alligator.
Dude, I was just thinking about that. Like, when you're like, hey, would you trust a wolf? I'm like, maybe in a really special situation. Would I trust an alligator or a crocodile? No way. Like, are you kidding? Look into those eyes. Yeah. That's like trusting a shark. Right. Just like, look at a shark. You tell me that that thing is like, you just know there's just a base level thought process going on there all the time. And you know what's wild? Have you seen these videos of, it'll be like an alligator or a crocodile and a, you know, little antelope or something. Something walks up to drink on shore, yep. You know, and they're cagey as hell because yep. They know there's giant murder lizards living under the water.
Yep.
And those an alligator or crocodile will come out swinging and try to get a hold of them, and they'll miss, and you can see them get pissed, like smash the water with their snout.
Yeah.
Like, not only is that a giant just murder lizard.
Yeah.
Right? It's also capable of rage. Like, can you imagine?
Oh, man.
If you catch him on his best day, yeah. He might eat you. Yeah. And if you catch him when he's pissed,
he'll roll and rip your arm off. Then you'll bleed to death. Then he'll eat you.
Yeah. Forget about it,
man. Nature is pretty sweet. I love, dude, whenever so back in the day on Sunday nights, National Geographic was on. And my dad... we didn't watch football. We didn't watch NFL football. We watched National Geographic. And my favorite episodes were all Africa. And even in some of the shows now, they don't even show the animal. Like, they'll show it chasing. They'll show the lion jump on a gazelle, and then they'll fade to black. And then they won't show what actually happened. But back in the late 80s and early 90s, National Geographic used to show the pack of hyenas ripping the intestines out of the zebra that they caught, and then the lion pride coming in, killing one of the hyenas, and then taking over that, you know, that dead zebra or whatever. Anyway, and then the alligators would come out of the water, or the crocs or whatever they were, grab the wildebeest by the snout, do a roll, break his neck, rip his face off. And I know this is morbid, they used to show that. That is reality, right? And so now certain reality is good, like the Kardashians, that kind of reality is good. But nature, you can't show that stuff. Blows my mind.
Dude, well, okay. So how many years of nerfing up real nature do you have to have before you get tourists who try to pet bison in Yellowstone?
Yeah.
Because that's the direct result.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Like Crocodile Dundee, where you see that movie where she goes to put her container into the water or something. It's around her neck, and the crocodile comes out of the water, bites the canteen, and then he has to, like, I don't know, he does something to it. I think he maybe, does he stab it in the head with a Bowie knife?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, Crocodile Dundee. I love that. I love that show. I'm sure there was some... do you think that movie was accurate in regards to being able to whisper to a buffalo to get it to move out of the road? Do you think that's accurate?
I think maybe not.
Probably not, yeah.
I think we're more likely to discover an orc carcass out there than be able to mesmerize wild game that way.
Now let's say this. Is there a wild animal... I want to go the best wild animal versus the worst wild animal. All right. We've already had this conversation about, okay, you have to bring one wild animal into your home to try to tame it and live, coexist with it in a house, potentially with a family. Is there, what would be the worst animal to do that to?
I mean, I think you'd have to either pick a snake or a reptile, right? Because yeah. It just feels like there would be, well, I don't know. If
you no emotion.
Pressure. Yeah. Like, I don't know, the animal I would be most interested in, and I don't know why this just popped into my head, but it would be an otter.
An otter?
I think you could train an otter to be a badass pet.
I think you're right. I was going to go a different direction until you said otter. But I feel like one of those giant river otters would be one of the coolest pets in the world.
Also, let's say your wife gets hit by a bus, mm-hmm. and now you're back on the market and you're walking a baby otter around. I'm just saying, forget lab puppies.
So you think an otter would help a widowed man pull more post?
Listen, I'm just saying, if your wife's suddenly like, I'm going to start free solo rock climbing, you might want to start looking into how to raise an otter, how to source a baby otter. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so what you're saying, an otter is going to pull the, if I go into a mall with a baby puppy, you think that a baby otter or a real otter would outperform? If 100%. My goal is to get a chick to come back to my house and potentially make love with her, you're saying that an otter would pull more chicks in my direction than a baby puppy.
I don't know why you said that way, because that feels like you just put yourself on a watch list.
Yeah, I mean, aren't we all on a watch list of some sort?
Potentially make love with her. Yes, I do think a baby otter would be way up there on just highest odds.
Okay.
Critter. Imagine a little like a little harness on it, and it's just running down the sidewalk next to you.
And if it was trained to do like a cool trick, like if you threw a little red ball, and for some reason I'm envisioning a little red ball, and you throw it in the air, it catches it, and it brings it back. It climbs up your body, and it puts it in a pocket in your shirt or something like that. And then everybody's like, oh, my God, how did you do that? And then you're like, well, why don't you just come over to my house, and I can show you how we do it. It's probably automatic at that point, right?
Well, I think so. I think just an otter, you know, laying on its back playing with a fidget spinner or something, mm-hmm. it's over, man.
Oh, my God. It's too cute. Fidget spinner.
Too cute.
Dude, we should write a movie about this.
Do you think so?
I think so.
I know a guy who produces films out in California.
Hey, I know a guy who works for a very popular podcast network, who it's one of the biggest out there. You, Ranella, maybe we should pitch this idea to him. Like, dude, we got an idea for a reality television show or... What would the name of that show be? But it has to have the word otter in it.
I don't know. I know that Steve would never go for it because all he'd want to do is trap it.
Yeah, but
he would have to be the villain.
He would be the villain. Okay. And we would be like two dudes before you.
Two dudes, one otter.
Before you, just wait. Before you go off the deep end here, let me finish. Two dudes, both widows, right? Hey, dude, you want to just move in with each other, save some money? Yeah, okay. Hey, by the way, I have an otter. And so the whole premise of this show is, let's say you own the otter, right? And I move in with you because both of our wives died somehow. And that would have to be
rock climbing,
canoe, getting hit mm-hmm. by a bus, like you said earlier, like a shelf at Target collapses, something like that. And we don't necessarily have to worry about money because we're going to be suing whoever. We get a large amount of money. I move in with you. Oh, maybe we go and we hunt public lands together, whatever the case may be. But this otter is always getting in between us and our plans, right? It's getting jealous, the jealous otter or something like that. And it sees that I am getting attention from you. This is just, the more I talk about it, it's just turning homo, kind of. I think maybe we should change the subject.
There's only one of us that took that direction, and it wasn't me. I was just sitting there going, man, this guy just keeps digging.
There's got to, there, but there has to be, I tell you what, take me out of it. put a hot babe in, then it becomes a comedy.
Can we hit the pause button for a second? I just want to ask you a question.
Like a pause button, like you really want me to pause recording?
Let's pause the development of our soon-to-be blockbuster feature film about otters.
Okay.
Otter ownership. Have you ever been to actual therapy?
No. Do you think I need it?
I'm just saying maybe. Just maybe.
Dude, every day I wake up and I go to myself, man, is today the day I call a therapist? But I honestly, when I walk away from these podcasts that I do with you, I feel better. I mean, obviously nobody's listening to this, right? I'm going to post it. I'm going to write my show notes, right? I'm going to come up with a catchy title, but probably somewhere around where we started critiquing Comanche shooting strategy, I'm pretty sure that's when I'm going to see an analytic drop off in people watching this or listening to this podcast.
Well, that's their loss, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, back to the otters. Let's continue that. I'm just joking. We don't want to continue the otter. So you feel an otter would be a cool animal to have. I still keep going back to a wolf. I feel I could do it somehow. I wouldn't have to, it would slowly transition from my garage or a pen into the house. You know, you gotta, because if they can do it in, what's that movie where, is it, Kevin Costner's in it, Dances with Wolves. Dances with Wolves. He kind of does it. And then there's another movie, a river runs through it. It's up in Alaska. He's a gold miner, and he's able to tame
a
wolf.
It's a Jack London,
boom,
based off a Jack London book.
It's not the White Wolf, is it?
I don't remember what it's called, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, all right.
Anyway. Listen, I think a wolf is an admirable choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think you could raise a bunny rabbit? Because I've hit. Like when mowing before, I've hit a rabbit's nest and destroyed a lot of lives on accident. I don't do it on purpose, but I've hit some.
I like how you said that like it was sort of a question. I definitely don't murder baby rabbits for fun, ladies.
But I think if anybody, even if you've lived out in the country, even in town, in certain areas, you've probably mowed over a rabbit's nest. I mean, it's in my front yard. They're in the same place every year, and now I just don't mow that little section because there's a little hole. I should fill it in, but anyway. Do you think you could raise a rabbit that way?
I think a rabbit would be easier than a wolf or an otter.
Yeah, you're right. Do you think?
I have zero desire to have a pet rabbit.
Oh, yeah, I don't want one either. I don't want a pet rabbit. They stink and they poop a lot. Okay. God, I had something else that I wanted to talk about. And this, what was it? So we talked about hunting in cinema. Oh, here's what we were going to talk about. How awesome is this time of year for hunting content?
It is my favorite. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
We get to talk about shed hunting and winter scouting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes planning a trip. This is the hardest. And this is only January. I think March is the hardest.
March is the hardest.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because by then you're like, well, I've written about shed hunting 16 times mm-hmm. and I've done a bunch of podcasts on it. And I've talked about winter scouting. And, you know, I mean, there's some topics in the outdoor space, like, you know, how to kill a mature buck can go a million different ways.
Right.
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 How to find an antler doesn't have quite as many exit ramps, right? Like, you're like, people are like, oh, I want to find more antlers. I'm like, you should probably just walk more while looking at the ground. That's about it. You know,
I get a kick out of that.
Dude. I mean, it's literally, that's it. Yeah. I mean, spend more time walking around out in the woods looking around. I mean, you know, there's, you know, certain days are better than others, carry your binoculars, whatever. Yeah. But it's like, it's pretty thin gruel, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I, so 2024 marks 10 years of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. Okay. And so I've covered almost every topic. Today's conversation is obviously a first about otters and alligators and things like that. But I honestly do dread this time of year. And usually this time of year is when I come out with some kind of series that it just kind of covers everything, which I'm doing with that No Foreplay series that I'm running right now. But the conversations with about late season scouting and about shed hunting, it's very hard to get so detailed into that when you know the answer already. It's like, you don't need to listen to Dan Johnson or Tony Peterson talk in detail about how to go find sheds when the answer to that problem is go walk the properties that you have access to and look down on the ground.
I mean, it's
now let's break it down. Let's break it down 500 different ways.
Honestly, to me, it's not as bad, but it feels kind of as bad now as rut hunting content.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way things have gone out there with people kind of hunting smaller and smaller places and hunting, you know, leases, whatever, it's really a matter of time on stand in a certain kind of location.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, the terrain traps or just there's like certain spots, and it's like, you know, I mean, you can talk about calling or whatever or access, but mostly you want to kill bucks during the rut. Yeah. It's hours on stand, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, yeah. Is there an article, or is there a specific piece of content that you literally dread writing or talking about every year?
Lots of it. I mean, it's hard. What we do is hard.
You made it sound like you hate your job. Like, well, I hate doing this.
No, I don't hate doing it. What I hate is there's always an appetite for the base level stuff. It's same thing in the dog training world, same thing in the fishing world. Like, there is an insatiable appetite for the basics,
yeah,
the how-to stuff. And it serves a purpose. I mean, people get something out of it if you do it correctly. Yeah. But once you've done enough of it, it's weird because you're like, do we need to keep doing this?
Yeah.
But people still want it. And it, you know, so it's like, that's just kind of on me. I would rather write something that interests me more,
mm-hmm,
you know, but... So that kind of stuff. And just this time of year, and the hardest part about, at least in my experience, the hardest part about, you know, writing or creating podcasts or videos around hunting is if it's this time of year, you're not doing very much.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, when you're out hunting all fall, or you're really into the scouting in the summer, you just have a lot of experience that you can draw from.
Mm-hmm.
This time of year, even years where I shed hunt hard and I winter scout hard, it's like the same stuff. Like, you're kind of just following the program. And so, yeah, you might find something cool or jump a deer here or whatever, but a lot of times that's the struggle, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't been out in the woods in a long time. The last time I went out to do something hunting related was late December, before New Year's Eve, and then before Christmas, and then after Christmas one time, I went to go sight in my muzzleloader, and I didn't go late season hunting this year, unfortunately, just too many activities going around, and I didn't, long story short, I didn't make it a priority, but I just ended up not doing anything, and I haven't done anything right since then. My trail camera batteries are dead, so probably early February, I'm going to go make it a point to go put batteries back in my trail cameras and check my trail cameras right before the sheds start to fall. So, yep. I don't know. don't know. But it doesn't get me excited, per se. It's almost like it's just something I got to go do.
Yeah. I mean, it's chores, right? Yeah. I'm the same way. The only thing I've done this month is cut down trees, and I'm trying to expand this little food plot on one of the properties I own for my girls. And, you know, I mean, I will say this year, I mean, I look out on my yard, I have no snow.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And so there is a chance to get out and scout this year for a lot of people. And I know it's different. I mean, I know they have snow in a lot of places, but I live in Minnesota. I mean, this never happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you're never in the end of January and have no snow to work with in kind of north central Minnesota. And so, I mean, there is an opportunity there, but it's like you said, it's not fun.
Right.
You know, like it's rewarding to go and get some of that stuff done, but it's just not the same thing. Like they're just a chore, man.
Yeah. Let's see here. I did want to talk about our wives and our relationships, but I think we're going to save that for another time. I do have one more topic I want to cover, and that is, have you ever had any type of shoulder injury or any type of injury that would have potentially kept you out of the woods?
Yeah. So I tore a muscle in my shoulder in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Doing shoulder presses at the gym, felt it. It was a partial tear.
Yeah.
In August, felt it, and ended up, that was the year I had to take my Bose down to like the mid to low 50s, mm-hmm, poundage wise. And I couldn't practice.
Yeah.
Like I tore it early in August. I don't remember exactly the date. And the only time I shot from then until the season was to just match broadheads to arrows and make sure my quiver was full of arrows that are going to fly the way I want them to. But I mean, it was like, it did not make me feel good going into the season. I was like, this is, you know, I'm shooting low poundage. I haven't practiced nearly enough. And that was one of the years in where Wisconsin opened the weekend before Minnesota. Usually they're on the same weekend every year. So you kind of got to pick, am I going to hunt home or am I going to go across the river? But like once every 7 years, they'll switch and they'll be off by a weekend. And that was one of the years. So I'm like, man, I got a free play in Wisconsin, then I can come home and hunt Minnesota. And I killed a buck opening night in Wisconsin, and I killed a buck opening weekend in Minnesota. And neither of my shots, I hit one in the shoulder and I hit one too far back, but it was a good angle. So neither of my shots were great, but I got to watch how that performed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, okay. Like now the season's only been open just a little bit. I've got two bucks on the ground already, and I got to see their performance. And that year, I ended up shooting really well, because drawing a bow that light and holding it is like so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So, once you get the confidence, like as long as you're keeping it close and it's going to work. And so that was like, as soon as that happened, and I went through that season, I've dialed all my bows back. Unless I have an elk tag, I think I'm going to go elk hunting, then I'll still shoot 70 just because. Yeah. I probably don't need to. But that's as close as I got to like actually taking myself out and maybe having to get a crossbow exemption or something.
Yeah.
And it was an eye opener.
Yeah. Yeah. I just got a shot in my shoulder on Monday, which has helped. This is the first week back to the gym for upper body. I've been doing off and on like lower body stuff, but upper body first time this week, and the shot has seemed to help. My strength right now is ridiculously low. I don't know how to say this without kind of bragging or anything. Like, I don't want it to sound like I'm bragging, but just in perspective, like I was doing over 200 pound lat pull downs, okay, and over 200 pound seated rows. I could barely do 85 pounds yesterday when I did my back workout. I was, you know, dumbbell bench press over 100, and now I struggled this week with 40s. And so although it's because I took so much time off and I was favoring my shoulder so much in that 4 or 5 month period, that I almost had what I felt was like some kind of muscle atrophy in it. And so I'm now starting to build that base again. But it was scary there for a while in September when I knew I had this shoulder pain. I knew that I had an option. I could keep shooting my bow, potentially hurt my shoulder more, and then have to, if I wanted to hunt, go get a crossbow exemption. So instead, I got my bow sighted in, and then I would shoot once a week, basically, just to maintain something. And I don't know how I missed a buck in South Dakota. He's still alive, but I shot him and I didn't kill him. But then the other buck that I shot that I actually killed this year, drilled him, right? And so when I went in for my x-ray or whatever, they did a CT scan on my shoulder. Arthritis, really bad. That's just from being old and tons of use. Labrum tear, so I have multiple tears in my labrum. And then just because of those other two things, tons of inflammation, which is causing the pain. And so it, as a man, it sucks to be in such good shape and then have an injury halt everything and then have zero confidence in the gym anymore when you can barely lift your half of your body weight. And I'm just like, this is bananas. And I was frustrated as fuck this week in the gym. Cause still the shot hadn't taken 100% effect and I was doing exercises. And so today when I go back to the gym, it's going to be my first actual shoulder exercise since I quit lifting. And so it'll be a kind of a tale of where my shoulder is at. All I want to do is be able to shoot a compound bow this fall. That's what I'm lifting and training for, to be honest with you.
Man, I literally just had this conversation with our mutual friend Clint Campbell the other night. He called me up. We were talking about some stuff. You hit a certain age, you're going to get injured.
Yeah.
It's going to happen, and people will look at this and go, there's two ways to look at it, I guess. You'll work out a lot, you're going to be more prone to some kind of injury, mm-hmm. but you're also going to have a baseline that's way healthier.
Yeah.
I mean, or you don't work out a lot, maybe expose yourself to a little less chance of an injury, but then you have all the other negative aspects that go with not being healthy.
Yeah.
And man, when you are used to that rhythm of going to the gym and running a lot, whatever, and something takes you out of the game, just like when you're hunting and all of a sudden you get an injury and it takes you out, it is an eye opener.
Yeah.
It makes you realize, the ground that you're on isn't as solid as you thought.
Right. Right. My knee injuries, I was always able to power through my knees for some reason, but and they would never be in a ton of pain. It would just be really tight, really stiff, and it would take a while for that joint to loosen up when I would go work out. And then once it's loosened up, then I can, back and do my squats and all that stuff. But this shoulder deal, it was damn near crippling. Like, I couldn't – there was a time it hurt so bad, I couldn't even put dishes – from the dishwasher up into the cupboard. I couldn't do that. I had to use my other hand to do that. And so I got really worried there for a while.
Yeah. When you're dealing with that, you're awful close to being a crossbow hunter, man.
I know, right? And so, and everybody who listens to this knows my stance on crossbows and how I feel about them. Just imagine if I had to shoot a crossbow, like I would get destroyed. But I don't mean like a ton of people would be out to hurt me. I bet there would be so many people that like, oh, Johnson shoots a crossbow now, just messing with me, but.
Of course. Yeah. But I mean, the other option is to not hunt.
Exactly.
No way, man.
And that's why I like those exemptions that are in place for a reason. I like the, if you have some kind of injury or disability, then you should be able to go out and enjoy certain times a year with a crossbow. Or if you're old, go shoot a crossbow. Like, I don't want you to quit hunting. I want that opportunity to be there for people when they need it. And so, and down the road at some point, it's probably going to happen to me that I'm going to have to go get a crossbow. But until then, I'm going to fight off the horde that is the crossbow, and I'm going to, I might go to trad first, then, which I don't know if that actually hurts or helps your shoulder. I'm guessing it will probably hurt the shoulder more because there's no let off. Don't know.
It can be part of the disease or part of the cure.
Yeah.
So because of no let off, it could be, you know, detrimental to your recovery, but you can also shoot a low poundage trad bow to build your muscles back up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a really decent option if for certain injuries. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be, but you also wouldn't need to do that. I mean, like I did it, you know, just you can dial down, you know, and if you're working with whitetails or, you know, whitetail sized critters, a lot of us are way overgunned with our gear.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't need to be shooting 70 pounds to get through an animal, even a big one that's like 16 inches wide.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have options, but it is one of those things where you just, like, you know that that's a possibility. Like, you could get injured and have to shoot a crossbow.
Yeah.
And you know that's going to change the game for you in a way that probably won't be quite as enjoyable, but would still be a hell of a lot better option than just being like, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to the woods.
I think what I'll do, though, is do a little bit more research. Can you use, in Minnesota, can you use spears or atlatls?
I don't think so. I don't think either one is legal in Minnesota. I don't know. I guess I haven't paid enough attention to it.
Because I think it would be pretty sweet to transition from compound to a spear. Like, that would be kind of sweet, wouldn't it? Like, you kill some kind of buck with a spear.
I think you're going to have to lower your standards, buddy.
I think I'm gonna raise them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Booners or bust?
Yeah, booners or bust with a spear or an atlatl. It would be pretty sweet to have a spear that would be weighted right or whatever. Tim Wells, right? Grab one of his spears and just practice with it. And see how accurate you can be with it at what distances. And so taking 60-yard spear shots at whitetail bucks and watching them just drop, that would be sweet to see, though.
I can't imagine a wild whitetail that would still be there by the time that spear got there. But it's, you know, it's possible.
Right.
Speaking of Wells, did you ever watch the video he made when he speared himself?
Oh,
did you see that video?
Imagine if he could have bled out. He could have died. Crazy. Yep. Absolutely crazy. And on top of that, I think he was just sitting against a tree in Africa when it went down. Dude, lions, hyenas, jackals, whatever's in that area is smelling that blood, and he could have got eaten by lions.
The one thing I'll say about that, I think he did mention lions in there, but I don't remember where he was hunting in Africa, but if he was in like South Africa, they would have a pretty good idea what was in there with him.
Oh, okay.
Because everything is high fence.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, I don't know if that's where he was, but there are a lot of places in Africa where if you were sitting there, a lot of the scary stuff you would know they weren't in there.
Yeah.
But I think he did mention there were lions in there. I can't remember for sure.
Yeah.
And a lot of those places do have leopards.
Yeah.
Even though they have fences, they you know, that stuff gets around it too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I honestly do think about. Like, if I was at, you know, 11,000 feet in Colorado, 4 miles in, up in the deadfall, and I break my leg or I break an ankle, no cell phone service. You would have to just old school splint whatever yourself to get out of there. That would be, that's, I think about that a lot, dude, unfortunately, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, even you take some of these Western whitetail trips and you're climbing trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you have a lot more reception now, but you know, like when I first started going out there, I was flying solo to a lot of those places. And you know, you know how it is, like you might get out there and be like, I'm gonna camp here.
Yeah.
And then there's people everywhere and you're like, I'm gonna go to the next camp. And suddenly you're not where you told anybody you were gonna be, and yeah, you're climbing up into trees. And yeah, it's, I don't know, you think yeah about it, and once in a while you run into critters out there, and you know, snakes and stuff like that. But
yeah, there was a story, this was on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast several years ago. A guy had set up a tent on a sandbar in a river, and 50 miles up river it rained really hard and it flash flooded. So in the middle of the night he heard some noise, and then he was in his tent and got washed away for just a little bit. While he's in his tent, he was lucky enough to get out, grab some of his stuff and take it to higher ground. But that shit would be scary,
dude. Water is, you don't mess around with water, man.
Yeah.
When you see people jumping into some of these, I can't remember what it's called in Hawaii, but there's some of these, like, I don't know, sucker holes where the tide or the action the waves will like suck the water level way low in underwater caves and stuff, and it'll come back up, and you see people jump in there, you're like, God, it's just like such a great way to drown.
Oh yeah, exactly. Hey, and that was the last time I saw Dad. So,
yep.
So, Mr. Peterson, another educational and informative podcast here for the both of us. I really do appreciate you taking time out of your life to come on this podcast and pretty much kill your career, or attempt to kill it.
Listen, it was going right down the drain anyway.
This may have just helped it a little faster.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
It's time to go lay sod.
Well, my friend, I appreciate your time. And, man, I'll talk to you when I talk to you.
Thanks, buddy.